PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is none other than Michael Verska, the man, the legend from Callaway. He is the director of custom fitting and player performance. And I did read that off my notes. You can find him on Twitter at TheGolfMan. He's on there probably more than I am, and I'm jealous. Michael, how are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you leaving out myth. I'm not sure about the legend part. I'll take the man, though. But it's great to be on. We've done it before, and looking forward to this one as well.
Yeah, so we're obviously in two different parts of the country, you being in the brilliance of California and me being in the sweltering humidifier that is Ohio right now. How is the weather right now, and are you playing any golf?
Weather is great. I played 18 on Friday and 9 on Saturday. We had my dad's 70th birthday party was this weekend, so we took a little road trip. Quick, you asked about the weather. Quick story. My wife and I left Carlsbad basically when I finished work on Wednesday, like 5:30, got in the road, stopped. It was 72 degrees when we left. Shocking. I know that only makes it, you know, 9,000 straight days of it being 72 degrees and sunny. But we got to the point where we needed gas and we also needed, fuel for the car and fuel for our bodies. We're getting pretty hungry. And the first place we stopped at, we got out of the car, it was 114. So it was when we got in the car, it was 72. When we stopped the car, it was 114 out in the desert on the way. And 42 degrees in, 4.5 hours is a pretty big delta. So but beautiful here in Carlsbad as always.
So where were you when you stopped? Sorry.
So we're going, I mean, basically if we're going to Salt Lake City, which means you drive right through Las Vegas. So we're way out in the desert, somewhere out by Bakersfield. Yeah. I think it's Bakersfield, California, somewhere out there. This was a tiny town. There was a gas station and I think a Hardee's. We just got to the point where we couldn't go any further because I was getting worried. You don't want to run a gas out there. Yeah. So we just stopped literally. They said the next exit that has a gas station and any restaurant, we're going to stop. And yeah, I think it was at Hardee's, and anyway, it doesn't really matter. But we got out of the car and noticed the 114 temperature, and it was stepping into an oven.
Yeah, I actually had a friend on last week from out in that area, and he just joined us at a THP event, I think 2 weeks ago now, in Myrtle Beach, which I don't know how much time you spent in Myrtle in the summer, but it is very different than the 114 you just experienced. So
a little more humidity out there, though.
Yeah, I would say so. So you played some golf. How's the game?
I played really well on Friday. They had punched the greens, which we didn't know till we got there, which was really frustrating. Because when we made the tee time, they didn't say anything. However, they took $20 off of it without us asking. We got up there and, they told me the price. And I said, that seems cheaper than when we made the reservation. And they said, well, we punched the greens. And so we're giving everybody $20 off. So that was nice. Anyway, but tee to green, well, most important thing, I beat everybody. I beat my brothers. I beat my uncle and my cousin who joined for the back nine, eagled 17, which is, really nice. I hadn't made an eagle in a while. Now I've made two eagles in three rounds. So something's good there, but, and then Saturday morning, my son beat me like a drum, which wasn't fun, but, always good to play with him. We got out and played a little mountain court, actually more of a, in the middle of the mountains, but the course was pretty flat and hit it okay. Friday played really well. Saturday played okay. Not my best, but just fun to be out and fun to be with family.
So yeah, you had quite the crew out there. I saw a picture you had posted on the social. You playing with your son. I mean, there's so many things to open up here. Do you guys play for signed golf gloves at this point? What's the play there?
There's always the battle. If I'm going to, use the Callaway glove I use all the time, or, give him a little Asher love and use his glove. We got out of his car and he had a rainbow of gloves. I mean, he had to have 20, 25 gloves. There is no outfit on earth that wouldn't match. And I didn't say anything to him because he wouldn't have got the reference, but I actually thought about Doug Sanders back in the day. If, for those people who remember really old time golf and flamboyant dressers, I mean, it would be good. So, but yeah, he played really well. His game's comes and goes a little bit, but it's definitely on the up and coming right now, and a lot of fun. But yeah, we have some battles from an industry standpoint as well.
Yeah, that's great. We actually just did a cool collab with Asher on THP, did a glove collab. I have way too many coming to me. I'm super excited about that. So
you're the reason they sold out.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't hurt it. That's for darn sure. So, but yeah, I don't know what it's like for you in the industry, because I'm assuming you get some product here and there. I can tell you one thing, buying gloves is one of the most annoying things to do as a golfer. It's not that I don't enjoy the different types of quality of gloves. It's kind of like one of those things you just don't have until you don't have it, or you have it until you don't. And then it's like, you got to scramble and make a decision. It's just annoying. So it's nice to get something cool like that Asher glove, or I used to get Callaway's Dawn Patrol gloves all the time because of the price and the quality that lasted a couple months because they're real thin leather, and then there they go. But do you have something in your experience that's just the most annoying thing to buy when you're a golfer?
So I do, and I've actually been talking about it lately, is golf tees. So I've been pretty blessed to be a member at a golf club at a private club for, I guess, 15, 16 years. And just, the ongoing house saga in California, I don't want to get into. I haven't joined a club out here just because I don't know where I'm going to live yet, and don't want to join a place and turns out I have a 40-minute drive it's interesting that. So this is the first time in my life I haven't been a member of a golf club. Well, not the first time in my life, but the first time in a long time, which is annoying on a whole bunch of levels. But interestingly, one of them is I can't grab the free tees that are in the pro shop or by the first tee. So I mean, talk about first world golf problems. I mean, that is like the top of the idiot food chain for golf problems. But I was just thinking the other day, like I actually did some consulting which I can't really talk about publicly, but I did some consulting for a while for a golf tee, a major manufacturer of golf tees. Maybe I can say it that way. So I've got some of those, but I'm even running out of those. Like I'm going to have to pony up and buy some tees. But the cool thing is, and this, it's not quite as bad as the internet head cover hole you can go down, but I find some really cool wooden tees out there, all the different colors and, the stripes and, people know what I'm talking about. I generally knew what they were, but hadn't really got down that rabbit hole. And for a week or two ago, I got into the golf tee rabbit hole on the internet. And anyway, I'm going to buy golf tees, which I can't remember the last time that is, but it's literally decades, not figuratively decades, literally decades.
So I'll tell you what, I made the switch a couple years ago to plastic tees after being a wood tee guy for forever. And like the main reason was I didn't have to worry about them because they'd last so long that if I ever ended up not having any, it was 100% my own fault. But you sound like a wood tee guy.
Most of the tees in my bag right now are plastic, but given my own druthers, I'm more of a wood tee guy. And just to be clear, there's no science behind this. I know that people know I'm an engineer and a techie guy. I'm not saying that there's any advantage. I just like old school wood tees. So
I don't believe you. I think there's something there you're trying to hide. Competitive advantage.
Yeah. You please keep using your plastic tees.
Yeah, there it is. We need to talk about something before we get too far into this, because I know it's been punishing to you mentally. It has nothing to do with golf, but everything to do with your happiness. And I am assuming you have a very good idea what I'm speaking of.
Yeah, I'm afraid I do.
Yeah. So your buddies over at Coke decided that change is always a great thing. And as the likely number one proponent of Coke Zero, you are having to accommodate, or I guess weather the storm of a brand new era in the Michael Vrska world.
Yeah, I honestly, I was a little disappointed they didn't give me a heads up. I mean, I think it's got to be a point of market share, maybe 2 points of market share on my own. But yeah, I was caught off guard with the announcement. Luckily, I'm pretty good about, much like you with teas, I'm pretty good about not running out. My wife had stocked up literally the day before, had made a run to one of the big stores. And so I had a pretty good supply the day before the announcement, but that eventually was going to run out, and bought some more and did an official taste test and everything, where my wife poured them in the glass. Only she knew which one was which, brought them over, let me try it. And I nailed the test. I knew instantly which was the new one, which was the old one.
But where are we here? Because it's such a big change. Are you okay?
I am, and it I still don't love the new one. In fact, when we went to Utah for my dad's birthday, I will admit that we went into a store and I bought another case because they had the old stuff. So my fridge is now 50-50, and I'm alternating to trying to keep my taste buds good. The new one is not bad. It's definitely not bad. It just tastes, it tastes significantly sweeter. Really? And I haven't drank, English is hard. I haven't drank real Coke, like, you know, just normal red Coca-Cola in forever. I mean, it's been a long, long time, but I from what my taste buds remember way back when, I think the new stuff probably tastes like the real, you know, leaded stuff, if you will. But I will recover. I had a couple hours of mourning and anger, you know, to getting through this. But I was proud of myself that I nailed the taste test, because if she would have brought it to me and I would have got it wrong, I'd been like, boy, I'm a poser. I'm not a real Coke Zero fan. But I nailed it. I did the taste test twice with, you know, just picking the old versus new, and was right both times. So.
You said you're happy about it. That's like more of a personal achievement, because I feel like deep down inside you're like, man, I hope they taste the same.
I was truly hoping that I wouldn't taste it. But if you do a side, you know, as the Canadians would say, a side by each rather than side by side, a side by each taste test, I can't imagine anyone not telling the difference. They are a little different. Again, not totally. They're, you know, they're brothers or cousins in the pop or soda family, but they're worth sneaking one by the goalie.
You got to join the dark side, man. It's all about Team Diet Coke at this point.
You know, I've posted on THP about Diet Coke.
Be polite now. This is my show.
Yeah. And in full disclosure, I drank a ton of Diet Coke until the day I tasted my first Coke Zero. And there is no going back. There is no positive comparison you can make to Diet Coke to Coke Zero at all. And I stand by my fairly mean-spirited but true post that I made a while back that Diet Coke is awful.
So in my defense, the Diet Coke is rarely straight up. It usually has a little bit of rum friendship in there. So I can't really speak to apples to apples. I do agree that Coke Zero is a good experience, but just because you said that, I'm going to go buy some Pepsi Max or whatever the heck they're calling it and drink that in spite of you. So I'm glad you're okay though, man. I've been worried about you. I've really been thinking about you. I'm more worried about the whole Coke Zero thing than I am the housing situation thing, just to be clear.
Yeah, well, the housing situation is definitely more serious, but much less fun to talk about. So I'm only going to buy one house. I'm going to buy dozens and dozens of thousands of millions of Coke Zeros. So
at least we have a number there. Yeah. Let's dive back into golf, because there's some big things going on at Callaway and around what Callaway is doing right now. And we may as well start with a big win over in Tokyo. Mr. Schauffele put on a bit of a show there. Did you catch any of it?
I watched it, as much of it as I could. I watched definitely, I think he was on maybe, I watched the beginning of the round, you know, watched the first couple holes. I had to go do something. I watched a couple more holes. And then I think I picked him back up on 12, maybe 11, and watched from there in. So I probably caught, I don't know, 14 of his 18 holes in the final round, something like that, with just two small breaks. I don't remember what it was right now, but seemed important at the time I had to go do. So watched a lot of it, really impressed, right? I mean, to, you know, think about the lost ball he had, you know, which, you know, could have got a little weird and, you know, had to take the drop and, you know, punch it out and wedged it close. Then on 18, you know, again, the kind of the same situation, having to lay up and then, you know, just hitting a wedge really snugly and making a clutch putt. I mean, it was really amazing. And my favorite shot, and it was right after I turned it back on. So it must've been like 11, 12, 13, a par five. He had, I don't know if he has a, if it was a 3, 4, or 5 wood in, but they could overhear him talking to his caddy and saying, hey, you know, I just want to hit it, you know, just right, you know, pin higher or farther. The announcers commented on where he was aiming, and, you know, you could see him where it was set up. He was hit it right up at the right edge of the green. And I mean, that ball was within a foot of pin high and within 6 inches of the edge of the green. And I said out loud, I mean, again, he had, I don't know, 30, 40 feet for eagle, right? But, and no one, I mean, my wife, my dog doesn't care. But I said out loud, you know, he's going to win it after hitting that shot. I just thought, how, you know, talk about control of your golf ball with a metal wood. He had to hit it within a yard of where he wanted to hit it, which was a super smart shot, away from the trouble, took everything out of play. I mean, I was just total control. And then again, when he wasn't in total control of the golf ball, that just the two or three loose swings he made, you know, the recoveries and then the focus. I mean, he never, I didn't once see, you know, an eye roll or a head dip. It just, he seemed to be in total control of his emotions and really focused. And obviously that probably had a lot to do with his dad and, you know, Stefan trying to be a, you know, probably would have been an Olympian if he didn't have the car accident and how much that meant to him and his family. So it was just really amazing. But yeah, again, if I don't know if they're replaying it on Golf Channel or anywhere else, but if anybody sees him hit what looks like in general, you know, if your TV was muted, it would look like a mediocre, again, 4, 5 wood, 3 wood, not sure which, to the edge of the green. But I mean, that shot was just amazing to me about them talking it through and us getting to hear it. And then the announcers commenting in it. And again, if I ever get to see him, I'm going to ask if he truly hit it to where, again, looked like within a yard of where he wanted to with a wood.
Yeah. So I was really interested to see how the Olympics would take shape prior to all of it unfolding in terms of the golf, because you have all this discussion of lack of passion, lack of interest in representing a country and things like that. Then you have a guy like Xander who has an incredible story as to why he wants to represent his country, not just for him, but also for his dad. Like ignoring the fact that there's a whole other side with the women's, was there a better guy to win gold? And not even speaking from a Callaway employee standpoint here.
Well, I think the answer is either Xander or one of the Japanese players, right? Just home country, what it meant, would have meant to them. But yeah, I again, obviously I'm a homer, right? I get that, but from a story perspective and, you know, saying the right things and wanting to be there, you know, Justin Thomas said a lot of really great things. It was interesting to hear Rory, you know, from the before the tournament, after his attitude and countenance about the Olympics completely changed. You know, he kind of gets it and now, and before he, you know, necessarily didn't. And so, yeah, I mean, if you look at what Xander said before and what it meant to him from a historical and family perspective, it's hard. And he is a genuinely awesome human being. It's hard not to cheer for him. But yeah, if you're asking the question, I mean, it's a homer answer, but I would say Xander or, again, just one of the Japanese. It's always great to see the home team win.
Yeah, I suppose you could make the argument for the South Koreans as well with everything that was on their shoulders. I can't imagine that kind of pressure, but I do like it. And here's one thing that I've been kind of watching for, Michael, and this is all the way back to 2016 when you had this collective of people who just they saw Olympic golf and they're like, why? Who cares? But now we've got two good Olympics in under our belt, and you're starting to see guys like Rory who's done a complete 180 and then a slight additional turn in the past 4 years, let alone the past month. It'll be fun to see the youth grow into this event more so than just being convinced that it's relevant. I'm really excited to see some of these guys who haven't had the opportunity in the next Olympics go out there and just really put the emotion on the line. And I think we got to see that. And we got a little bit of a free taste with Xander this year. And then a couple guys coming out of the woodwork like Sabatini. That was super, super interesting. So,
yeah, well, I'm not a gambler, but Sabatini had to have been 10 billion to one. yeah, I don't know what the odds were, but $1 and you would have retired on that one.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love that. I have a question for you when it comes to big time wins for your crew over there at Callaway. And this is not, I'm not asking you to pick one or the other, but is it a different mood around the company when a guy wins a major versus wins an Olympic gold? Because obviously you've seen both in a very short period of time.
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, the Rahm win, I mean, partly because it was in our backyard, right? I mean, literally down the street. a course that many of us have played many times. You know, Rahm had just come through with a horrible COVID getting pulled off, and you know, he's kind of a new dad. I mean, so the US Open win was really special. So I think that is just a tiny step, but I think it's unique to those circumstances, right? We certainly love Xander. We certainly support that. Obviously, we love, I mean, on a personal level, I just love the Olympics. I mean, the swimming events and the track and field. And I have an uncle who said something, and I don't know why it stuck in my head. I was young, 10 or 12, and we got talking about something. He said, anytime you can see the best in the world do something, go do it. Doesn't matter if it's tiddlywinks.
Yes.
Go do it. And I don't know if we were even talking about the Olympics, but again, I was little, and that conversation with my uncle Carl Colley has just never left my head. And I've always, every Olympics, like, I'm going to go see the best in the world. I don't really know what a biathlon, why we have that, but I'm going to go watch it because this is the best in the world at cross country skiing and shooting. And I don't know why they put it together, but it's a thing. Yeah. You know, or rhythmic gymnastics. I don't know why they need a 40-foot ribbon, but man, it's artistic and cool. And so I love the Olympics. You know, Callaway is as general as, you know, obviously a lot of diehard golfers, but a lot of big sports fans as well. So tough question, but again, if you compare just Rahm's versus Xander's, I'd say maybe Rahm's by a nose, but it's so close, and we're so excited about both of them. It's tough to really pick one, but those are my thoughts.
That's cool, and I love the thoughts on the Olympics too. I like the off the wall stuff. I watched a video of the girl from, I believe, China who got multiple full 10 diving scores. It was unbelievable. But I really enjoyed, there's the sharpshooters where they had their hands in their pocket. That was cool. And then the trampoline, man, those people are nuts. And I love it.
I get dizzy just watching the trampoline people.
Right.
I have to like make sure I'm sitting down. Don't stand up too quickly. I mean, I don't know why trampoline is an event. I don't know how it got there, but it is. And these are the best in the world. I mean, these are not people who are going to go be millionaires by trampolining, right? I mean, right. I get the basketball players and the golfers, right? And so many other, you know, the gymnasts, you know, they're going to become wealthy and, you know, and live the rest of their lives as these Olympic champions. So many people do this because they love it, right? They are passionate about whatever the sport is. I forgive me if there's any hardcore canoers or kayakers, but the ones where they're kind of kneeling down and they're down.
Yes.
I mean, that talk about athleticism and balance and strength and speed and power. I had never seen that before. Now, maybe it's been Olympics 100 years and they just decided to show it this year. But I was mesmerized by watching them. Again, I forget now if it's canoe or kayaking, so I forget. Please forgive me if you're an expert in that field. But just watching that, like, how many hours in the gym and in a – and on a lake or a river was put into that? And the answer is tens of thousands for them to get there. And why are they doing it? Because they love it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, I love the passion. I love the commitment. I love the desire. You know, and in many regards, that's more of what the Olympic spirit is about than watching KD drain a three from 30 feet, right? That's so amazing to watch. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, the differences in what it takes to get there. And, you know, Olympic basketball is really amazing, right? But it's probably not the pinnacle of the sport. The NBA is probably still the pinnacle of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what other canoe and kayaking races are, but I'm pretty comfortable the Olympics is it for that.
Yeah, that's a great take, man. And I'd be curious to know if our listeners have a similar perspective, because I think a lot of times you end up taking things like the Olympics for granted. We watch unbelievable athletes in the sports that we know and love do things that we couldn't possibly consider doing, you know, week in and week out. But when you have those sort of obscure events where, you know, these people spend their time with no cameras rolling behind closed doors or in an open pond doing what they need to do to exceed those of anyone else around the world, I mean, it truly is an unbelievable feat. And one, I think, worth spending the time on. So
I'm a fan.
Yeah. We got a little bit off course there on the Olympics, and I'm glad we did, because I think it does deserve some time. But there's something I have to get into this show, and that's that you guys have a pretty significant wedge release that just came out today. We're recording on a Tuesday, or was it yesterday? Was it today?
It came out today, August 10th. Yeah, live today.
Okay, so we release on a Friday, so we'll have been out for a few days now. I had a chance to look through James' piece on THP's website, but there's also a lot more to it, and I think you have it in the bag right now. It's the full-toe Jaws. Can you lay into us some information for those who haven't been on the internet all week?
Yeah, I've been using a PM grind it's a 59 degree, 58 bend to 59. And I absolutely love it around the greens. Kind of that 50, 60 yard in, it's borderline cheating. I mean, it really is. The way that, you know, the camber and the bounce and it's a pretty big head, with the full face grooves, and it's like cheating. It really is an amazing wedge. But I'm not great with it on full swings, I really use it for three quarters and in. And the sand wedge I was using, I loved on full swings and kind of full to three quarters. And it was good around the greens, but I quite frankly, it's probably great around the greens, but I had just so much fall in love with the PM grind and what I could do with it on a bunkers. If you have a long bunker shot, I like to use both my sand and lob wedge out of the bunker. Most of the time the lob wedge, but if, you know, I have a little longer, then I'll go a little less loft. And I've been in meetings, development meetings and how fitting relates to it with these wedges for quite some time. And I just finally, after one of the meetings, I'm like, boy, this sounds like this wedge is designed for me. It's full toe. It's got a really cool C grind that's not the PM grind, but super versatile, great on full swings, great around. It's like someone designed a wedge for me. Maybe I should ask for one. I work for a golf company. Crazy, I know. So after listening to it for like 2 months and hearing the test results and seeing how, working through the development and the cosmetics and all that stuff, I finally went to one of our program managers and said, hey, could you find me a 54? I really want to give it a try. Had it built up and took my then gamer, with that one. The shafts were the same, the links were the same, the grips were the same, everything was the same about them except the head. And it was exactly one range session. And that was my gamer. It was just that fast.
Wow.
It is so versatile around. It really is, for the people who, have hit a PM grind and love it, but maybe they struggle with the look of it. It's maybe a little too extreme. It's perfect for Phil, right? It's Phil Mickelson's wedge. But for some people, it's a little too extreme from a look standpoint, or maybe they're like me and they don't always hit it great on full swings. This wedge to me is the ultimate combination for that 54, 56, 58. If you want to make full swings, if you want to use out of the green, you want to use it in bunkers, you want to chip with it. I mean, it is, Johnny Wonder posted a video today as well. I happened to be at the ECPC the day he filmed it. And I had only had my wedge for a week. So I think I'd played, I went to that one range session we had talked about. I think I only played 9 holes with it when they recorded that video. And or maybe it's 2 rounds, 18 hole, night. Doesn't really matter. Hadn't had a lot of experience, but I was already in love, right? This is my baby. And he went out there and in no time flat was just raving about it. You can look up his video at the ECPC. It really is that versatile. You really can hit there. I mean, maybe I can't hit all the shots, but all the shots that I can hit and want to hit, this wedge does it for me. The faces are raw, the body of it, mine's chrome. We also have a black version, but the faces are raw. So, it's our tightest grooves. It's our most jaws aggressive groove, but the face will rust some. I posted pictures of mine today. Somebody called it patina. I hadn't used that word in a while, but I love it. Mine's got a little patina on it in a good way. It's just a great wedge for me from about, kind of that 105, 110 full swing with the sand wedge, all the way down to right next to the green on a bump and run, a longer bunker shot, a pitch shot, the low checker. I mean, it just does everything that there's no compromises with this wedge. And I've really come to embrace the full toe. I was, a little skeptical about it at the beginning when they first started coming out in the industry. But when I worry about, you know, flop shots and little pitches, I actually, you know, just aim a little out more to the toe now. Because I still get all the spin. It takes a, you know, it deadens it a little bit. It's not, you know, lessens the rollout. It's again, I total pitch man here, but I'm totally in love with it. And I was in love with it before I could even talk about it. In fact, if somebody goes back, I don't remember when it was, but I realized after I had posted about a month and a half ago, I shot a picture of my bag. And if you look really, really closely and zoom in and know what you're looking for, I actually, again, you can't really see it. You can't see the name or anything. But technically, I did leak the wedge in a tiny way, but you wouldn't really know it. But I did. So guilty.
Yeah. So you talked about full toe, obviously the grooves heading all the way out there. And it is a different look from that traditional presentation and definitely different from the irons that we've seen. And I'll admit that I have seen on many occasions around the green trying to hit a flop or a touch shot, and you look down at the club, even if it's a good shot, and you see that the amount of grass that's on it is actually like right on the tip of the grooves into like that full body face. And we've seen different iterations of companies coming out and saying, well, we've added this subtle milling presentation there that maybe supports that. But then you have this sort of extreme, which is the grooves running all the way to the end of the toe. My question for you is, was it ever a conversation to go halfway to the toe? Was it always going to be full or not?
I mean, we've looked at lots of different things. One of the wedge team is really great about getting feedback from Roger Cleveland, obviously, who has more experience in wedges than everyone else on earth combined, as well as our tour team. I mean, they're pretty aggressive of going out there, getting prototypes, and getting out there. So if it was a consideration, it wasn't very long or very serious. And I guess one thing I also wanted to add, because you, I don't remember, I'm not sure the words you just used, but that's the other thing I like about this Jaws full toe raw face is it is full toe. It is full groove face. It does have a higher toe, but it's the most traditional looking that combination that I've ever seen. I mean, from a shaping perspective, I think they've hidden that high toe so well, just kind of the teardrop, pear, whatever, term you want to use, shape of it. It really looks pretty traditional, and, me coming a fairly traditional guy, that's why I didn't put the PM grind into my sand wedge is, that's one of the reasons, but I just love that. So, yeah, I mean, there's always an option, right? Do you go all the way? Do you go halfway at what we call typically toe extension, which is the area of the toe without grooves? Do you make that shorter, the tour's really embraced it. We introduced this at the Detroit event, which I can't think of what the name of it is right now. Rocket Mortgage, maybe. Mm-hmm. Rocket Mortgage. And I think there were five in play that week, and they had never seen the final version. They'd only seen some prototypes and rapid prototypes as well as metal prototypes along the way. That was the first week we took it out to all of our tour pros, and we had five in play. Showed up Monday morning, and Thursday we had five in. So. The pros have embraced it, and again, for those people who can't, aren't huge fans of a Mickelson wedge for some reason, which I don't understand, but I kind of get it. This is a happy medium. I hate to even use that term because this is not medium in any way. This wedge is amazing in every way, from a technology and again, from an aesthetic point of view. I think people are going to be surprised when they see it in person. Wow, this is a high toe, but it looks familiar. It doesn't offend in any way, type comments.
So is it, I'm kind of stuck here because I have two big questions I have to ask you. First, I'm going to go with the one that obviously is going to make my buddy James cringe a little bit. And that's the raw face finish in the groove area. You're obviously not opposed to that. You seem to be perfectly fine based on the picture I saw of yours. What is the appeal to rust for you personally, and why is it become such a popular thing when typically rust means bad?
That's a great question. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I'm a little weird on that, is that I don't love golf clubs that look new.
Okay. That doesn't make any sense. No.
I like the bag chatter, I like things that look battle tested. I like clubs that I know I've pulled remember that time I hooked it around the tree and knocked on the green? You know, I like when I look down, I like to think I've got some reps with this. This is something that is part of my golf game, right? Okay. And when I put a new club in the bag, there's that part where I know it fits me. I know I've, you know, tested it, but does it love me as much as I love it? I know it's an inanimate object and that's not real, but do you follow? So that rust to me, that patina, that goes to the heart of this is part of my bag. You know, even being in the industry and having, you know, being truly blessed to be able to try different things, I don't switch clubs very often. I never have. I've been in the industry 22 years, you know, and I haven't counted, but I'd guess I've had 22 sets of irons, one a year. I mean, that's, you know, I use them and I love them. And so the rust doesn't bother me at all. You know, again, I like the fingerprint, if you will, that everyone's a little different. My 50 degree wedge is really rusty. And when I pick it up, it like, wow, isn't that cool and ugly? And I love it. You know, so I know it's not for everybody. Anthony Toronto, who knows a lot about wedges, is not a rusty guy. You know, he likes the chrome and obviously he stamps them, make it look beautiful. When I took, my PM grind is a non-plated version. And he's like, you want me to stamp this up and you're going to let it rust? I said, absolutely. It looks great. It's got a little rust here and there. And, so yeah, it's not for everybody. I mean, but that's why we did this, is because we've heard that and the back of it's chrome. So when it sits in the bag, the sole looks great. You know, the back looks great. But we wanted the face to be the best spin generator, most consistent spin generator out of both dry and wet conditions that we could do. I mean, Callaway, you know, obviously, you know, we like to make male jewelry and female jewelry and golf clubs, right? But we're ultimately a performance brand, period. We only produce things, try to only produce things that are superior and better and differentiated. So, you know, we do it because it works. I mean, that's the bottom line, is that we think with this configuration, that's going to generate the most spin and perform the best. And I like to have any help that will help me perform the best. So I'm in.
I think that was the most anti-iron cover argument I've ever heard in my life. It's well done.
I am proud to say that I sometimes get nauseous seeing iron covers. Yes.
That's the golf man on Twitter.
And you can at me about iron covers. That is a hill I'm willing to die on.
Wow. Coke Zeros and iron covers. There's no wiggle room for either of them.
Zero. Those are black and white and no gray.
I love it. Well, let's talk a little bit about the fitting. Obviously, that's a big part of your custom fitting, is a big part of your role. I would assume it's been an incredibly challenging year from an accessibility to product standpoint. Have you had to make changes on the fly or anticipate for 2022 with not an awful lot changing?
Yeah, we certainly have. I mean, I'd like to, you know, obviously, if you're listening to Off Course Podcast on THP, you're a pretty diehard golfer. So I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you know there's been challenges with, you know, all COVID related, getting things in and out of China, in and out of Vietnam, in and out of other countries. You know, not only from a shipping perspective, sometimes things were shut down, so we couldn't build things. And whether it's our heads or shafts and grips that we buy, yeah, there's certainly been challenges. And, you know, I'm hearing that Callaway is doing as well, if not better than anyone in the industry. We have an amazing team of program managers and purchasing agents. Unfortunately, I can't tell some stories, but I've heard some things they've done with shipping and changing ports. Like, this boat was supposed to go here and it had a bunch of stuff on it, and they halfway across the Pacific Ocean and they sent it to this other port because we could get it off the ship faster. And I can't get into those kind of details, but just really impressive stuff. And it's one of those things where always proud to be a member of Team Callaway, but sometimes you realize, you know, I'd like to think I'm good at my job, and there's a whole bunch of people who don't get to do podcasts and don't get to talk to consumers who are probably better at their job than I am. Like, you know, shipping coordination, they get no love, they get no, you know, no one's ever going to pat them on the back and go, great job with that container, right? I mean, that's not something that people say, but it's been amazing. Now, having said that, you know, I'm sure many people who've bought clubs have felt some pain sometimes. You know, I sometimes get hey, we just fit this guy into this club. He absolutely loves, the Apex Pro or the Apex DCBs. We fit him into the shaft. And, you guys are quoting 4 to 6 weeks. And, sometimes that's inevitable, right? We have incredible partners and they're working really hard, but, it's been tough out there. So we have experienced some of that. We've had to pull, we send notifications. We've got really good at tracking it. So our fitting teams out there have a much better knowledge of what we're low on or out of for a short period of time. So we've been communicating that and doing our best to make sure fitters don't fit people into stuff that we can't get. It does happen occasionally, and we're truly sorry. And to know, we just want everybody to let, literally hundreds of people at Callaway every day are trying to work it to make it better. And we are in a really good place. We're caught up on a lot of things, not everything. There are some pockets here and there, but it's been a challenge, and I'm really proud to be a small cog in this giant machine that's doing some cool things.
I love that. And this year you also kind of took a step further with the customization of any average golfer's bag by doing some things like the triple play, putting a bunch of your different types of irons into the same set. Has that created additional challenges, or has that been pretty consistent with the whole process?
So I think with a lot of data, and I will also say a lot of luck, that has not caused any or many issues. Anytime you create something new, it's really hard to look at old data because there's no data exists, right? But as we were creating those sets, we were talking with some of our top fitters in the country, some of our top accounts, saying, hey, this is what we're planning on doing. What percentage do you think you would sell for this one compared to that one compared to a stock set? So we kind of group, kind of got that group think going and got it together. And, we're reasonably close from a percentage wise on what our estimates were, certainly within the realm that we can adjust inventories and that sort of thing. So, I'd like to take credit, but the only reason I'm taking credit is because I asked the right smart people to help me out and they made me look good. So, yeah, we weren't shy about continuing to fit and doing all the things we needed to do the right things, creating, the sweet spot, the triple play, the player set. We could have taken the easy way out and said, oh, COVID's happening, let's back off. But it was the exact opposite. We wanted to continue to be leaders and that sort of thing. And again, we've got this incredible large team behind the scenes who hopefully make us look good most of the time.
Well, here's my favorite part of the episode. You can tell me, because no one's actually listening this far in at 42 minutes, what is coming next year? What can you tell me about Callaway in 2022? And give us all the trade secrets, everything.
Everything. We will have new drivers, fairways, hybrids, irons, wedges, putters. At some point in 2022, I would bet that we would have at least one of each of those.
We're going to have new stuff with things. Right? Yeah.
Our R&D team is constantly working on new stuff, right? I mean, obviously we have a major product launch every year. We're really good about keeping, the 18 to 24 month product life cycle, right? Where they continue on in different price points or different consumer segments. We're always working on stuff. And some of it, I know about almost all of it, maybe all of it. And there's some stuff that is always really cool, but the stuff we have now is pretty darn cool as well. It's all in my bag.
So I'm going to ask you to try and not spoil or get in trouble, but is there one specific segment of product that you're most excited about for 2022? You don't have to say, you could just be as general as you want. What can Callaway homers alike get super excited about for next year?
Wow. I don't know if I can answer that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to pass. You almost got me. I can't figure a way to talk around it without being too specific.
Okay.
There's lots of cool stuff, but yeah, there is one that I think could be a game changer for a particular club type, but cool. I don't have the vocabulary to say it without saying it.
I love that. Well, I mean, that clears it up, folks. We got exactly what we wanted out of them. So it give us at least an idea. You've been in the industry over 20 years. It's been a while for you. Is this the most excited you've been for a release, or is this up there from in terms of what's down the pipe?
It really is. And, I mean, partly just because the technology continues to evolve and, you know, some of the stuff we're doing in fitting that will come out over the next, we're right at the 12 month mark. Some stuff that'll be coming out over the next 12, maybe 14 months that I'm really excited about. Some stuff I've been working on for a while that, you know, some of it got completely halted because of COVID. I mean, we weren't fitting for 6 months, right? We weren't allowed within 6 feet of each other. And other stuff that we just couldn't get done because of COVID. So stuff that, you know, in a different, in our alternative universe with no pandemic would probably already be out. So yeah, I'm really excited from the technology we're going to launch, from what you're actually going to be able to hit, but also really excited about how we're going to be able to fit you into that. You know, we think we do a great job now, but when we have this the same podcast 12 months from now, even better, even more sure that you're getting what's perfect for you.
Cool. Mr. Verska, do you have any questions for me tonight?
Only to see if Josh or you are going to cut this from the nearly 46 minutes I'm seeing. You'll have to cut out some of my gibber. No, I want one of the things you asked me before, and I'm only asking because my brothers asked me, you've been in the industry 20 year type question. I have the best bag setup I've ever had, and I'm confident in the most confident I've ever been in 14 clubs in my life, which is saying something because I've designed, you know, a whole bunch and
yeah,
top to bottom. I mean, I really feel like I've got the perfect bag set up. Where are you at in a 14 club confidence test?
You know, I played with someone about a week ago and they made a comment of, and I don't know if it was a compliment or it was more of a shot at me. He goes, "You have a really interesting bag makeup." I go, "Okay." I mean, I've got a super long four iron, like lengthwise. I've got Epic Forge 5 iron hanging out in the bag. It's kind of like my 220, 230 club. It's a monster. I have a lot of pieces in place that I'm very excited about and a lot of open opportunities, including the obvious ever. I made a joke on Twitter. I think you saw it a couple of days ago, because my driver game is atrocious right now. It's as bad as it's been in years. And I said, golfer, clearly it was me. I said, "Driver game sucks right now." And Buddy goes, "What are you going to do about it?" The golfer goes, "Well, I'm going to buy a new putter." So I think my only solution to fixing everything is to buy. I think I need to scratch the itch on the Toulon, and I'm going with, I think, the Vegas. I think I got to do it. Yeah. Yes. So,
well, this is your show and I certainly don't want to end the show, but I will give everyone something to chew on. This is a conversation I've been having about fitting is, you know, for years and years, meaning back in the wood, you know, wooden shaft days, you bought one club, you bought a Mashie Niblick and you bought this and you got your clubs together. And then we went all the way to, you know, buying 14, you know, 13 club sets and you'd pick out a putter. You know, I think the trend's going to go back the other way, right? And your bag, you just said, "I've got the super long four and I got this weird five iron." You know, certainly there's going to be a small iron set in there that kind of, you know, is a set. I think that's getting smaller and smaller and more piecemeal in the future as we fit better and get more data. We're going to, you know, fill holes in bags in a new and different way. So, if anybody's looking at anything to chew on, if this podcast ever ends, that would be one of them.
Well, that's the whole reason why the Epic Forge is in there. Cause I have the X-Forge CBs in, and my perspective is, why am I hitting that kind of club in a five iron at 200 plus yards? I'm not looking for, you know, hyper accuracy at that point. I'm looking to get the ball in the air and going. And that's what Epic Forge does in a nutshell. So yeah, I think a lot of people defer to the utilities or hybrids. I'm having more fun messing with those irons at the top of the bag, seeing like what can I just hit that I can totally shut my brain off and pretend like golf is easy for 5 minutes. Yeah. So yeah, good counter. Let's get this conversation going on social for all you guys out there listening. How weird is your bag right now? Is it weirder than mine is, since I've clearly presented it like it's a mess? Or is it rusty like Michael's is? Either way, it sounds like we got some great stuff coming from Callaway in the future. Michael, we always appreciate your time here and best of luck as things progress into the new year, I suppose.
Appreciate it, Dan. Thank you.
All right. Anyone out there playing this weekend, have fun. play well and tell me about it.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.